wife of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was charged with fraud on Thursday over allegedly misusing state funds. An indictment charged Sarah Netanyahu, along with a government employee, of fraudulently obtaining more than $100,000. That money allegedly used to supply hundreds of meals from restaurants.
Plastic or paper? That straw poll is becoming increasingly familiar at companies from McDonald's to Starbucks. Just last week, McDonald's announced it's phasing out plastic straws in the UK and Ireland. CEO Steve Easterbrook says with its 60 million customers, the company wants to be an environmental leader.
Blockchain technology being deployed to de-risk emerging markets with companies like BitPesa, building a fintech platform to change the face of money payments and transfers.
Well, BitPesa is a platform for creating liquidity in emerging market currencies. And we use Bitcoin as a means of settlement between our brokers. But really, the goal is simple, reduce friction in doing business in frontier markets. And the way that I believe is most useful is to become a liquidity provider for currencies. So if you can't buy or sell a Nigerian Naira, you can't do business in the country.
WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's June 25th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. So happy you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell, another business week, another business day getting underway. And on the broadcast today, the business of sports. First off this morning, Sean Hunter will join us from the new Chicago Dogs minor league baseball team. We'll talk about the creation of the team and how all of it came to be. And a little bit later in the program, how about dive into World Cup ratings? They're down considerably from 2014. We'll dive into that in the second segment, about 5:40 this morning, here on The Opening Bell. But first, let's begin with the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Futures are pointing towards some weakness on Wall Street when the opening bell rings later this morning. Dow futures are off 163 points, more than 0.5%. The S&P and NASDAQ are down more than 0.5%, and the futures trading as well this morning. NASDAQ off 62 points. Around the globe, markets in Europe are generally lower. The DAX is off more than 1%, almost 1.5% now. The CAC in France is lower by almost 1%, and the same story with FTSE in London, down nearly 74 points. Markets in Asia also in the red this morning, with the Hang Seng down more than 377 points, good for almost 1.25%. The Nikkei off 178. All of the markets that we're looking at in Asia are lower. Crude oil is at $68.82 a barrel, which is up about 24 cents. A couple of stories we're watching for you. President Trump lobbing new threats against U.S. trade partners. Trump said yesterday on Twitter that the U.S. is insisting that countries remove artificial trade barriers and tariffs on U.S. imports to their countries or be met with more reciprocity from the U.S. He says the trade must be fair and no longer a one-way street. The president has strained relations with North American and Asian and European, with North American and European allies by imposing tariffs on steel, aluminum, and other products from those countries. At the conclusion of a meeting of the world's leaders of the economies, world economies last month, the president told reporters that he had pressed for fair and reciprocal trade practices. He said he also urged his foreign counterparts to remove all tariffs, trade barriers, and subsidies from their trading practices. But again, this morning we're watching the markets reacting to a lot of that, especially in Europe and in Asia. A new survey finds that almost half of European Union business leaders have cut UK ties since Britain voted to leave the European Union 2 years ago. The report published today by the law firm Baker McKenzie surveyed more than 800 business leaders in six key EU countries. It finds that despite European outrage over Brexit, 95% of companies in the country surveyed say that the UK is important to their business. But again, 50% of them have cut ties with the UK or are planning to. We begin first front and center this morning with the Chicago Dogs minor league baseball team. It's the business of sports. Sean Hunter is with us this morning. He's the co-owner of the team. Sean, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Let's begin by talking about the beginning. What was the thought process that went into starting the team? Where did the idea come from? How did it begin?
Well, I've been in sports my whole career, mainly in the NBA and the National Hockey League, running teams, but I've always had a fascination with with minor league baseball, and actually always wanted to own a team. And it was back in 2015 that I was introduced through friends to Mayor Stevens in Rosemont. He shared a similar dream to bring professional baseball to Rosemont. We met, hit it off, and we really started designing this project in 2016, and here we are today. So it was a little bit of luck and a little bit of the right time.
And the process of finding the right name and the right ballpark and coming up with the right secret sauce, I bet there's a lot that goes into that. Can you walk us through it a little bit?
There is. You know, I don't think there's a better market in minor league baseball in all of the country than probably Chicago, given the passion here. And Rosemont is a great entertainment destination. But there are. Starting something from the ground floor is some days daunting, but I'd have to say the journey's been very fun. The name Chicago Dogs came out of a brainstorming session. You know, we toyed with kind of the airport and different iconic features of Chicago. But when I heard Chicago Dogs the first time, it clicked, and we really didn't have a second option after that. We zeroed in on that name and a logo that represented all of Chicago, and we're very proud of that one.
Chicago Dogs, Chicago Hot Dogs, right? Not the animal dogs.
That is correct. Yeah, yeah. The iconic Depression sandwich.
Never catch up, right? That's the old rule on that.
That's right. We have a lot of fun with banning or joking about banning ketchup at the ballpark. In fact, one of our two mascots is actually ketchup. We have a hero mustard and an anti-hero ketchup.
We always, I guess it might be a little cliche to talk about it, but the old Field of Dreams saying, if you build it, they will come. Is that sort of the idea here? I mean, you've sort of indicated to us that there's been this want for a minor league team, but you're constructing sort of a ballpark and a team experience, aren't you, that you hope will attract even more people?
We are. I'd have to say the hero of the project right now really is the stadium itself. It's a beautiful facility. It's a $63 million project that includes structured parking, so it's very easy to get into and out of. It's very affordable, but it has all the features of a Major League Baseball ballpark, and the only thing, as we like to say, minor league about it is the ticket prices. So we've got every seat, a little over 6,000 seats, right on top of the field. We've got a private club. We've got suites. We've got party decks for groups ranging from 25 to 300. So there's a little bit of something for all fans.
I read somewhere where you want to create the best ballpark experience in America. Lots of the ballparks we see nowadays have been around for a while. This is something you create from the ground up. What goes into that?
It's really taking the best of venues from around Major League Baseball as well as Minor League Baseball. I think one of our best design features is a 360 concourse where fans can come in and walk around the entire ballpark and explore, whether it's food and beverage. We have a kid zone that's free. We just have a lot of things to do from an entertainment standpoint. So the mobility is first. I think the sight lines, we went down and studied all the new spring training ballparks in Arizona. The mayor and I did two springs in a row. And so we went down there and took as many good ideas as we could and put them into our project here in Rosemont. So taking the best of the best and then putting it into action here.
Sean, hang on with us. We're going to continue our conversation this morning with Sean Hunter. He's the co-owner of Chicago Dogs minor league baseball team out in Rosemont.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, this is the final day that original Dow Jones member GE will be included in that index of 30 blue-chip industrial stocks. The once-great conglomerate has downsized dramatically in the last decade. It'll be replaced in the Dow Index by Walgreens. The Dow Jones Industrial Average managed to avoid a historic ninth consecutive daily decline on Friday, advancing 119 points to 24,580. The S&P 500 also posted a win, advancing a little over 5 points. The NASDAQ composite finished the day 20 points lower. The latest battleground in the trade fight between the U.S. and China may be technology firms. Several reports say the Treasury Department is working on rules to prevent companies that are at least a quarter owned by Chinese firms from buying U.S. tech companies. And historically low unemployment may be pushing fast food prices higher. McDonald's, Domino's, and Chipotle are said to be wrestling with when and how much to raise prices to cover labor costs that have risen as joblessness has fallen. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. We're on this morning with Sean Hunter. He's the co-owner of the Chicago Dogs minor league baseball team out in Rosemont. Sean, before the break, we were talking a little bit about the experience of being at the ballpark there and the ideas behind the team. But let's talk a little bit about the team. What should we know about National American Association of Independent Professional Baseball League. What should we know about that?
It's a great level of baseball. It's really close to double A and affiliated ball. So it's our league, which has 12 teams from the north, Winnipeg down to the south, Dallas-Fort Worth, is focused on the younger rising player. We have, I think it's 14 or 15 guys that are starting in Major League Baseball that came from our league, probably the most famous being Max Scherzer, the pitcher for the Nationals. We have a 23-man roster, and our manager is the former big leaguer Butch Hobson, who played for the Boston Red Sox and actually managed them for three seasons in the 90s. So got a lot of good baseball guys in there, a lot of young guys that are living the dream, want to get back into affiliated ball and make it to Major League Baseball, and we're hoping to give them a chance.
And so there's that level of competition where players are out there trying to get to the majors, perhaps. And so the competition, I'm guessing, is pretty good on the field.
It is. We've got 12 great teams. You know, the biggest market other than ours is the St. Paul team, the St. Paul Saints. They're actually owned by Bill Murray, the actor, and obviously a big baseball fan. He's part of a group that's had that team for 25 years. So the league itself is very stable, and the quality of baseball is great.
Let's talk a little bit about the numbers, because that's what we like to do on this program. Let's talk first about how much it costs to go to the ballpark, how you've set ticket prices, and why that's an important aspect of all of what we've been talking about.
It is. You know, what we talked about earlier is that this is, I think, such a great venue and a great experience. The only thing minor league really is the prices. We have tickets, our bleacher seats, which even the bleachers are great because they're right on top of the action, and our bleachers have backs to them, so it's a comfortable experience. But those are $9, and we go as high right behind home plate, which are padded seats, and you can order food and beverage from your seats. Those are $25. But the average ticket price is just a hair over $13. A family of four can come out and you know, experience great baseball. Parking is only $3. We're very proud of that. That's in the structured garage next to the stadium, and then there are surface lots around the park where you can park for free. So a lot to do for a very low entry point.
The total development on this, I think, was about $63 million. How will you gauge success? Will that be a numbers thing, or will it be an attendance thing? The revenue versus attendance and fun. How do you gauge that?
Well, it's both. I think, you know, given the vision of Rosemont, they have great success in building their entertainment district and a handful of big community assets out here. So I think in terms of Rosemont's vision, it was to bring the park and bring fans to come early and late, eat in their restaurants, shop at the fashion outlets. And so I think there's a lot of synergy with the location that exists. From the baseball standpoint, you know, we've got a long-term business plan and think that if we can stick with our plan and early indications are supportive of that we can break even in year two or three as a team, which would be great. Obviously, it's a very fun industry, but it is a business, and our primary revenue streams are ticket sales being the biggest and most important, sponsorship, food and beverage, and retail.
What are the challenges going forward, would you say?
I think just patience. You know, this is such a great market. It's a busy market. So for us, building our brand and kind of rising above the noise is the most important. We've had early success from ticket support, but I think that's only going to grow, in years two, three, and beyond. We had just a wonderful opening night, standing room only, and that, I think, showed us the potential of what we have in future years. I mentioned the St. Paul franchise owned by Bill Murray. They sell out every single game. So we have 50 home games in our league, and the St. Paul Saints are sold out literally every game of every season. So that's certainly something that we aspire to in future seasons.
Well, Sean, we wish you and the Chicago Dogs all of the best. Beautiful ballpark out there in Rosemont. Everybody needs to go out and check it out, and we'd love to have you on again when you get down into this thing so we can see how it's going.
Thank you, Steve. Have a great week.
All right. Sean Hunter is the co-owner of the Chicago Dogs minor league baseball team. You can find more about them online at thechicagodogs.com and on Twitter at the Chicago Dogs.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Chicago-based medical device and drug maker Xerix Pharmaceuticals raised $86 million in an upsized initial public offering of 5.7 million shares for $15 each. Other than Chicago, the company has offices in Austin and San Diego. Dig Dates, a dating app that helps connect dog lovers and owners, launched in Chicago over the weekend. Similar to other dating apps like Tinder, Dig allows users to swipe yes or no on each other's profiles in hopes of finding a match. But when two users match on Dig, the dating service helps them find a dog-friendly date idea. And Caraset is an Evanston-based fashion startup that created a new fashionable backpack for women. It features a waterproof compartment for carrying food, and it recently won first place in Northwestern University's Venture Challenge in the B2C category. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Monday edition of The Opening Bell. Some other news we're watching for you this morning. OPEC nations and oil-producing countries not in the cartel say they have agreed to share increased oil production a day after OPEC announced it would pump more crude oil, a move that could help contain a recent rise in global energy prices. Russia and other oil-producing allies say that after their meeting Saturday in Vienna with OPEC countries, they would endorse a nominal output increase of 1 million barrels of crude oil per day. The Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries says in a statement that both members and non-members of the oil-producing countries decided that the countries will, in their words, strive to adhere to the overall conformity level, a voluntary adjustment of 100% to 100%. The statement did not say how the production increase would be split between OPEC and non-OPEC nations. Federal data shows the United States imported more seafood last year than at any point in history, and the nation's trade deficit in the sector is growing. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration data says the U.S. imported more than 6 billion pounds of seafood valued at more than $21.5 billion in 2017. The country exported more than 3.6 billion pounds valued at about $6 billion. The data says the seafood trading deficit grew by more than 10% from 2016 to 2017. Commerce Secretary says is now currently identifying how to reduce that deficit as a priority for the federal government. The U.S. is home to major commercial fisheries for species like Alaska pollock and New England lobster, but it imports more than 90% of the seafood that the public consumes. In the wake of high-profile mass shootings, corporate America has been taking a stand against firearms. The industry, firearms industry, amid a lack of action by lawmakers on gun control, payment processing firms are limiting transactions. Bank of America stopped providing financing to companies that make AR-style guns, and retailers like Walmart and Dick's Sporting Goods imposed age restrictions on gun purchases. The moves are lauded by gun safety advocates, but criticized by the gun industry that views them as a backhanded way of undermining the Second Amendment. The gun industry leaders see the backlash as a real threat and are coming to the conclusion that they need additional protections in Congress to prevent financial retaliation from the banks. But just about everyone agrees there's little the gun industry can do to fight back in this area. The average price of a regular gallon of gasoline fell 6 cents over the past 2 weeks to $2.95 a gallon. That's the first drop in nearly 4 months, according to industry analyst Trilby Lundberg. She warns the decline will be temporary. She says that oil prices recently rose $3 a barrel after OPEC said it's limiting oil production. She says it's likely that will lead to increased prices at the pump in the weeks ahead. The lowest average gas recorded in the 48 contiguous U.S. states, $2.44 a gallon in Charleston, South Carolina. The highest was $3.79 in the San Francisco Bay Area. The average price for diesel fuel fell to $3.24 a gallon. New York regulators are requiring credit reporting agencies to register with the state in the wake of last year's Equifax security breach that exposed the personal information of about 148 million Americans. The governor of New York announced yesterday that the Department of Financial Services has issued new regulations aimed at protecting the private data of millions of New Yorkers. The Democrat says the state financial service regulators now have oversight for the first time over credit reporting agencies operating in New York. He says in addition to registering with the state, credit reporting firms will have to comply with the state's cybersecurity standard. This is likely to be a model for other states going forward. It is 5:42 here on the opening bell. The number of people watching World Cup TV is down. Ratings are in. We're happy to have with us this morning Ira Boudway, a reporter at Bloomberg. Ira, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You've been writing a little bit about this. First of all, tell us how significant the drop in viewership is and why.
It's been about 44%. The decrease. And the biggest two reasons are the lack of the U.S. team didn't qualify this time around, which was a surprise to everybody, and the fact that these games are on in the morning. They're starting as early as 6 a.m. compared to afternoon and evening starts last time around in 2014 when it was in Brazil.
Any sense of how this compares to the international audience? Is it just folks in the U.S. that are watching it less, or are ratings down around the globe? Do you know?
I haven't seen data. I would expect that in most of the world it's comparable. It's been a pretty good games that I've seen. It's been competitive. Been a lot of goals, not a lot of 0-0 draws. And I don't think there's any reason to think that the interest in soccer has declined in the rest of the world. So I would imagine that they're not seeing declines like this. I mean, the only thing that may factor in is that everywhere now mobile viewing is the future, and the degree to which you can measure that and know the size of that audience may factor into sort of what the TV audience looks like. But I would say that you're not going to see what you're seeing here in the U.S. outside of here.
Does the recent announcement that World Cup may be coming back to the U.S. or is coming back to the U.S., I'm guessing that's good news for companies like Fox, the folks that are broadcasting that, Telemundo, the sports on NBC. That's probably good news for them, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think, honestly, they can almost write this one off, because the way that it worked out is Fox and Telemundo, they bought the rights to 2018 and 2022, which is Qatar, together in one lump, and they took them away from Univision for Spanish language and from ESPN ABC for English, and then FIFA decided to move the World Cup in 2022 to the fall, which really changed things, because the fall is when you have a lot of sports programming already if you're Fox, and so Fox was not happy about that. And basically, to make it up to them, FIFA said, you guys can have a no-bid, very cheap 2026 World Cup as well. And so they didn't have to outbid anybody else for what probably will be a huge ratings bonanza, because there will be a bigger field, most likely. They're going to expand the number of matches for the 2026 World Cup, and it's going to be perfect, you know, in the U.S., hopefully with the U.S. team qualifying and with massive interest in this part of the world. So I think they will make it all up on that back end, and that's probably what they're counting on.
Ira, every once in a while you hear people say, well, soccer is really growing in popularity in the United States. Lots of folks, they say, are switching over to that as their sport of choice, but the ratings don't bear that out. I mean, are people watching this at all, and would that be a fair assessment or no?
I mean, they're still drawing. I mean, Fox and Telemundo will both tell you, look, we won the week. You know, the Fox beat ESPN for a week. Fox Sports won. Their cable sports network beat ESPN for the week, which was an accomplishment for them. For Telemundo, this kind of on the map versus Univision, and certainly among the Spanish-speaking population, there's strong interest. I think the time zone thing is not to be underestimated. I mean, when the World Cup was in Korea, you know, the audiences were tiny because it was on in the, you know, early morning. And so people have to be at work. It just changes the whole dynamic. So I don't know how much this is a referendum on how much people care about soccer in the United States. But, it is true that if the U.S. team isn't playing, the interest is just not the same. So for people in the U.S., at least when it comes to the World Cup, we're interested in soccer mainly when it's a sort of patriotic event. There isn't just a sort of broad, deep interest in any World Cup match here that you might find in other parts of the world.
How big of a deal was Mexico's success recently in driving up ratings, do you think?
Well, that was for Telemundo, actually. That match beat the... So we looked at, when we say 44% down, that's Nielsen ratings for the first 16 matches, which is sort of round one. And in that first 16, the Telemundo audience for the Mexico match, their first match, beat Mexico's first match on Univision last time around. So they actually had a higher peak. And Mexico, the farther they go, the bigger that is for Telemundo. That's really the main driver for them. And in a way, you know, I don't know if for the English-speaking audience that will be big. I mean, it was sort of that game and the Brazil game in the first round were the two biggest draws, with about 4 million each in viewers. And those two for Fox, you know, were about equal. So Mexico is a big draw for English speakers as well, and both networks have tried really hard this time around to go after bilingual viewers. They both have hired a lot of former Univision announcers, and they're both trying to, you know, compete for fans who want to watch Mexico. So that's important, especially to Telemundo, and I'll be curious to see how big a draw Mexico can be for Fox going forward.
Is there anything that these two companies could have done better or could do better to better promote and market their coverage? Is there a failure in that area, or is it just what we've been talking about?
The only thing is, there's some notion that Fox kind of punted on the coverage this time around. They're calling some of the matches remotely. They only sent two teams of announcers to Russia, and the other matches are, there's somebody in a studio here in the U.S., you know, they're watching the same feed you are and calling the match. Which, you know, you could argue no one would notice if they didn't know, but it certainly says something about what they want to invest in this. So, you know, they might have been able to do more, but they also, I think, are trying to cut costs this time around. And they didn't hire necessarily, they did go after a lot of the Univision crowd to try to get a bilingual audience. They did not necessarily hire a lot of the biggest, most famous voices in soccer. The Fox decided to go with a very American cast, which is definitely, you know, a choice, and they said because that's the way they like to cover it. But the most famous names in soccer announcing usually are Brits, so they did not pony up for guys like Martin Tyler, who can be quite expensive.
You mentioned earlier the difficulty sometimes in gauging the streaming streaming audience. Can Nielsen do more in this area? I know this is that we have the same conversation about the time of the Olympics as well. Lots of different screens people are watching. They need to perfect this a little bit more, I'm guessing.
Yeah, so they've tried. They actually, the audience, the numbers that we have from 2014 versus 2018 are not exactly apples to apples. It's the same, you know, column in the spreadsheet as 2014 that we're comparing, but they have added some to their sort of survey group. They've added a batch of people that are meant to help them capture streaming viewers, and they have new metrics that they offer networks and advertisers, both around streaming viewers and around out-of-home viewers, which is a pretty big deal for sporting events like this. You know, people gathering in bars. That was something that ESPN has made a big fuss about over the years. We want to know who's watching Monday Night Football out with their friends. And Fox said that, you know, those returns are a little slower to come in from Nielsen, but they told us that they've been pleased with what they've seen from out-of-home viewership. So it's definitely the case that it's much harder to get a real total audience number now with all the sort of various ways that people can watch. And networks will tell you that, you know, this isn't really capturing the true audience. But Nielsen has taken steps to try to do that. And even when you do look at what, say, Telemundo is calling its total audience number for this time around, it's still pretty sharply down from 2014.
Ira, we appreciate being with us this morning. Thanks for the analysis.
Thank you for having me on.
Ira Boudway, the reporter at Bloomberg. World Cup ratings down 44% from 2014 in the U.S.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, lots of weakness in the market this morning heading toward 8:30 Chicago time. Dow futures are down 212 points and still going down. NASDAQ and S&P futures are lower by about a percent as well now as well. NASDAQ futures down about 80 points. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. We start this trading week following the fourth week that the price of soybeans and corn has fallen at the Chicago Board of Trade as continued worries about the trade dispute between the United States and China continues to overhang the market. But on Friday, we saw the nearby soybean contract gain 16 cents a bushel to end the week at 894 and a half. Corn was unchanged at 357 and a quarter. July wheat down 5 3/4 at 491 and a quarter. And in the livestock futures trade Friday at the Mercantile Exchange, the August lean hog contract down 45 cents a hundredweight, June cattle down 22, and the August feeder cattle contract up 72 cents a hundredweight. Well, John Unken, publisher of the Agridairy Business Letter, in his publication this week said that according to various reports, Dean Foods will apparently be closing seven processing plants in seven states: Kentucky, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, Illinois, Michigan, and Minnesota in the coming months. Dean Foods has not confirmed all of these closings as yet. But one of the long dairy companies in business in the United States apparently going out of business, blaming the decline in milk consumption, hurting sales and profits. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Monday, June 25th. The Commerce Department reports on the number of new homes that were sold in May. We'll also get a report from the Chicago Fed on their National Activity Index. The Dallas Fed Manufacturing Survey is also due out today. On the earnings calendar, among big companies reporting earnings today, Carnival Cruise Lines. Tomorrow, Consumer Confidence comes out for June. Walgreens replaces GE on the Dow. Wednesday, earnings from Bed Bath & Beyond, General Mills, Rite Aid. On Thursday, Walgreens Boots Alliance earnings come out. Nike, also Foxconn breaks ground on that new plant in Wisconsin. On Friday, the China investment restrictions deadline is out. We'll also get consumer sentiment numbers on Friday as well. Just some of the things that could move the markets today and through the week from our market desk outlook.